Okay, so I saw someone post on Facebook this week. Is anyone teaching Torah that is not related to COVID-19? He's getting burnout. In that spirit, doing something completely unrelated. Just, I think, an interesting topic to get us thinking. It was a share I gave last year here on Shavuot. And it focuses on a fascinating phenomenon in Tehillim Kuf Yud Tet, which is, for those who are keeping track, it is the longest perek in Tehillim. It's an acrostic of the alphabet. Each letter gets 8 psukim, which makes it a quite large 176 psukim. And it is, for the most part, an ode to Torah. But before we look at it, I want to introduce the problem that I want to grapple with in the Mizmor with a completely different problem, and that's as follows. So we all know that one of the central features of Jewish life is Talmud Torah, is learning Torah, and the ideal of learning Torah, as the Gemara describes it, is the enigmatic phrase, Torah Lishma, to learn Torah for, well, not exactly clear how to translate that phrase. It can be translated for its own sake. It can be translated for its purpose, right? Lishma can mean, right, meaning for it. Lishma can mean for that which it was intended to, l'shem X, right, for the purpose of X. It could mean for the sake of God, which gets a little bit complicated because then you would say not lishma, but lishmo, but we could solve that and say maybe it's, for the Shechina or some other feminized description of God. And fundamentally, there are wide-ranging disputes as to what is it that we are trying to do when we engage in Torah. And even though I said I'm not going to talk about coronavirus, and I'm not, just one point here is that I think, you know, for a lot of people who are busy on a normal basis and going to work, the amount of time they actually have to devote to Talmud Torah is maybe not as much as they would like. And the main access that we have to Avodat Hashem often is tefillah. And I think that has flipped for a lot of people, right? Meaning for me, who I've been in professionally teaching Torah, most of my day is usually spent teaching Torah. But I think for most people, that's not true, right? The majority of their religious time that they have in the day is as tefillah, and hopefully tefillah in shul, and that's sort of been turned upside down. And now, you know, a lot of people are stuck at home, and the way we keep ourselves sane is often a lot of shiurim on Zoom, and the plethora of shiurim that are being offered for Pesach. So it's a good time to think about what exactly are we doing when we learn Torah. So as I said, there are different opinions, and if you look at the Rishonim without getting too much into it, you'll see that some take the position that Torah Lishma means you do it for the purpose of what it was intended to. What was it intended for? Lilmod Amenat Lasot, to learn for the purpose of doing, and we learn in order to both practically figure out what we're going to do, as well as inspire us and deepen our experience of religiosity, whatever we're doing. There were other Rishonim, and this position definitely became the dominant view in Hasidic thought, that the purpose of Talmud Torah is really l'shem Hashem. We're doing it as a means by which we connect to God, and that's really what you should be focusing on. But then, in the Litvish yeshiva tradition, a position arose, introduced by Reb Chaim Volozhin, primarily, in Nefesh HaChaim, where the phrase Lishma was understood as learning Torah for its own sake, meaning not for God, not for practical purposes, but for the purpose of studying Torah. I mean, what exactly does that phrase mean? So this is a dispute. Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, in his PhD dissertation, analyzed Reb Chaim Volozhin and argued that what Reb Chaim Volozhin meant was that, in fact, the goal of Torah was in the intellectual engagement with the Torah. That's it. It may be that in sort of some metaphysical realm, you connect to God, or you change the cosmos and make it that the cosmos connect more to God, or you influence the way that God connects to the world, and all types of things that he describes, because he was a Kabbalist. But your focus when you learn is to engage with the Torah. And the extent to which you connect to God, that's good, but that's not what you're focusing on when you learn. Rav Eliakim Krumbine wrote an extensive critique of Reb Chaim Volozhin. He said, that doesn't make sense. And he said, you have to distinguish between the goal of Talmud Torah and the way or what you're thinking about while you're learning. And he said, what he argues is that Reb Chaim Volozhin thinks that the when you're learning Torah, it can be quite distracting if every 5 minutes you constantly think, and you take, you know, for every 5 minutes of learning, you take 5 minutes to sit and just dwell on how much you love God. Because then you'll never get anything done. I mean, it's very nice. You'll be connected to God, but you'll never get any content done. You'll never get through anything. And therefore, Chai Volozhin is saying that when you learn Torah, you should be focusing on the Torah. But the goal is not the intellectual engagement. He doesn't argue that the goal is not to connect to God. Obviously, the goal is to connect to God. Why else are we learning the Word of God, if not to connect to Him? It's just that practically, while you're learning, you shouldn't be thinking about it too much, and it's legitimate to just focus on the content in front of you. And he notes that for that reason, Chaim Volozhin endorses the following sort of compromise, which is that normally when you're learning Torah, you should focus on Torah. But every so often, periodically, you should take just a minute or so to remind yourself why you're learning, to think about God, which Rav Krumbine takes as evidence that the purpose of Talmud Torah, everyone agrees, is to connect to God in one way or another, even if we don't think that you constantly have to be thinking about that while you're actually engaged in Talmud Torah. Now, why do I bring that up, right? That sort of philosophical debate, right? What's this purpose of Torah? What are you thinking about? So I bring it up as a background to this very strange, but also incredible, Perek of Tehillim, which, as I said, is an ode to Talmud Torah. And one of the things that becomes fascinating as we go through this Perek of Tehillim is that the line between God and Torah, and whether we're focusing on God or we're focusing on Torah, and which one we should be focusing on, is intentionally blurred, which I think cuts to the reality that, as much as it sort of philosophically I can distinguish these, often the line between those are not so clear, right? We are so engrossed in Torah and mitzvot that sometimes we're not thinking cognizantly about God. Now, some people, especially Hasidish thought, would criticize that and say, you're missing the point. Right? If you're not thinking about it constantly, you're missing the point. But on the other hand, you might respond and say, no, 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 we all know that God is behind it. Or at least, as long as we know that God is behind it, we don't have to constantly be thinking about it. We can enjoy the learning. We can enjoy the mitzvot. We can feel their inspiration at all their different levels. As long as we take a little bit of time to focus on God, we don't have to constantly be going back to that. It's okay that at some level we relate directly. Our sort of proximate connection is with the Torah itself. And I think that this complexity is played out in Tehillim Kuf Yutet, which is pointed out by a variety of modern scholars, is pointed out in several comments along the way by Amos Chacham in his commentary to Da Mikra, and others as well. And I want to go through it and maybe talk about what it might mean. And we'll, you know, I don't know how, if we draw conclusions, but even if we just point out the phenomenon and talk about what it might mean to our religious experience, that will already be an accomplishment. So I'm going to share a screen. I'm going to share a screen specifically. I'll do it with the Svaria one so that we have the English there for everybody. So let me, can I do that? Can I share a screen or no, because I'm not the host? I can. Good. Okay, share screen. There we go. Share. Okay. Does everyone see Tilim Kuf Yutet now? Does everyone see my screen with the Svaria, the Psukim, Pasuk by Pasuk?
Yes.
I can make it bigger, but everyone sees this screen, right? Okay, so I'll make it bigger. We'll do it a Pasuk at a time. Is this big enough? Can people see it? If you have a Tanakh, feel free to pull it out. If not, is this good? This is big?
Oh. You can see it, yeah.
Okay. So, now it's just getting bigger on me. Okay. So let's take one example of the phenomenon that I mean. So if we look here at Pasuk, let's say, Yud-Tet. Okay? Or you know what? Let's just start. We'll start before we look at an example. If we start the Perek of Tehillim, you find the theme. Ashrei tmimei darech ha'olchim b'torat Adonai. Happy are those whose way is blameless, who follow, here the JPS translates, the teaching of God, but the Torah of God. So clearly the theme of it is Torah. But let's look at something interesting. So if we look here at Pasuk Yud Tet, here we go. The lost soul writing in this Perek of Tehillim writes, Ger anochi va'aretz, al taster mimeni mitzvotecha. I am but a sojourner in the land. Do not hide your commandments from me. So here you have this person who's a stranger. He's suffering in some way or another. And he needs connection to something beyond himself to provide solace. What would you have guessed the deeply spiritual psalmist David HaMelech would write at this point, right? This person is lost. He doesn't know what to do with himself. So what would you say? Where would he... What should he be thinking at this moment? Who does he need? Or what does he need to keep him calm? I see everyone's muted. But you're feel free to unmute. Or chat. Whatever works. Okay, nobody. Okay, well, if you had asked me to guess, I would have said, well, if somebody is lost, if someone's in pain, whatever pain it might be, but here the guy happens to be a stranger in a strange land, so I would say that the solace he's looking for is God. And that's what I would have thought. God. And yet, that's not what the Perek of Tehillim says. The Perek of Tehillim says what he wants is to get solace from the Torah. Now, if this pasuk sounds familiar to you, it should, but from another place in which we get what you might have expected. So if you look here in Tehillim Chav Zayin, L'David Hashem Ori, which we say during Elul, so there as well, David HaMelech is in pain, he's scared. And what does he say? Al taster panecha mimeni. He asks God in his suffering and pain not to hide his face from him. Meaning, the author, in Perek Chav Zayin, David HaMelech, when he's in pain, he turns to God. And yet, that same language of Al Taster Panecha Mimeni, right, when it's in Tehillim Kuf Yotet, this ode to Torah, it's not hide your Don't hide your face from me. Don't hide you from me. I need you, God. I'm suffering. I'm alone. My enemies are chasing me. I'm sick. Whatever. It's, I'm a stranger, so don't hide the mitzvot from me, which doesn't even seem to fit. And what does that mean, don't hide the mitzvot from me? I know what the mitzvot are. I can do them or I can't. What does it mean, don't hide the mitzvot from me? The mitzvot become personified, as if the mitzvot themselves can provide solace. It's not God, right? He's clearly talking to God, which only makes this weirder. Right? He's talking to God. He's in relationship with God. He's in conversation with God. But instead of saying, God, I need you, he says, God, I need mitzvot. Right? I need mitzvot. Please help me and make sure that the mitzvot aren't hidden from me. To look at another example, in Tehillim Tetzayim. So I'm going to be switching back a little bit. I'll try to pull each one up on the screen. So in Tehillim Tetzayim, Pasuk Chet, we have a very famous pasuk that is often written in shuls above the Aron Kodesh. Shiviti Adonai l'negdi tamid. Ki mimini bal emot. I am ever mindful of God's presence. He is at my right hand. I shall never be shaken. And in this pasuk, we understand. Again, the person is saying that no matter what happens, he has confidence that he can make it through any challenge that life throws at him because God is always there. He's mindful of the fact that God is present. God is there for him. And that makes sense as a religious sentiment. But if we turn back to Tehillim Kuf Yotet and we skip along to Pasuk Lamed, David HaMelech says, Derech Emuna Vacharti, I have chosen the ways of faithfulness. Mishpatecha Shiviti, I have your rules before me. I've set the mitzvot before me. And here he tells God, again, he's in conversation with God. God is clearly there. He's not talking to the Torah. He's talking to God. But it's not God that he's cognizant of constantly. It is the mitzvot of God. And just to make it clear that he is talking to God and yet actively saying that his solace, his relationship, is often not with God. Again, while he's talking to God, he's saying this. If you look at the next pasuk, he says, Davakti be'edivotecha Adonai al tivisheni. I cling to your decrees, God. Don't put me to shame. Right? He tells God that he's clinging to his mitzvot. So again, he's talking to God. And yet, instead of saying, God, I cling to you, he says, I cling to your mitzvot. And this is a very strange statement, because we have several times in the Torah, throughout Tanakh really, where this language of dvekut, and when you think of dvekut or dvekus, you think of clinging to God. And in fact, that's how it is. Yes, yeah, someone sent me a comment, I will come back to it. I will come back to it in a minute. But if we look at other places in Torah, right, we don't have this, we don't have dvekut to the mitzvot. We have, for example, in Parashat Ekev. Here, I put a few psukim together, so let me. I'll share screen with this screen for a minute. Second, even though it doesn't have the translation on it, but I'll share it just so I have it if I can. No, show all windows. Here we go. So in Parshat Ekev we have Et Adonai Elohecha Tira Oto Ta'avod Uvo Tidbak Uvishmo Tishaveya. You should fear God and serve him and cling to him and swear in his name. Later on in Ekev, you get Kim Shamor Tishmirun et Kol HaMitzvah Hazot Asher Anochi Mitzaveh Etchem La'asota La'avam Adonai Leichem Lalechet B'chol Rachav Ludav Kavo. If you keep all the mitzvot which I command you, to love God, to follow his ways, and to cling to him. And elsewhere in Tehillim Samach Gimel, for example, Davka Nafshi Acharecha Vitamcha Yiminecha. My soul has clinged after you or to you. You've supported me with your right hand. Or in Yoshua, V'chazaktem ma'od lishmor v'la'asot et kol ha'katuv v'sefer Torat Moshe l'vilti sur mimenu yaminu smol. You shouldn't turn from the Torah. So again, the context is clearly Torah. L'vilti vo agoyim ha'ila nisharim ha'ila itchem u'v'shem Eloheim lo tazkiru v'lo tashbiu v'lo ta'avdum lo tishtachavu lahem ki im badonai Eloheichem tidbaku. If you cling to God as you have done until now. And in general, right, we move through Tanakh and we find that consistently we are said to be clinging to God. And yet, in Tehillim Kuf Yutet, we are not clinging to God, at least not directly. We are clinging to his mitzvot. And you find this throughout. Right? You get this in Pasuk Nun Bet, Zacharti Mishpatecha Me'olam Adonai Vet Nacham. I remember your mitzvot, O God, I find comfort in them. Zalafach Hastani Mirashim Ozvei Toratecha, and I am seized with rage because of the wicked who forsake your teaching. Right? Meaning I find solace in the Torah and the mitzvot, and my rage is against those who give up on the mitzvot. The focus here is those who keep Torah, those who do not. My solace is in Torah and mitzvot, not necessarily in God sort of directly. In Pasuk Nunvav, you get this as well. Zod haita li kifikudecha natsarti. This has been my lot, for I've observed your precepts. And in Nun Zayin, he tells you, chelki Adonai amarti lishmor dvarecha. My portion, I've said, is to keep your words. One second. I'm going to look. I see I have chats. So let me look at these. One second. Good, so let me read out the comments. Well, you know, let me highlight the problem and let me read out some of the suggestions, because I think both of them that I've gotten so far are correct. But I think it's important to think about this. In other places in Tanakh, like I said, when we talk about clinging to someone or finding solace or feeling safe, so we talk about feeling safe directly, because we are in relationship with God. Because we're talking to God. God is the one who provides solace, right? We pray, we turn to God, and we say, whatever it is, we're sick, we're afraid we'll get sick, we're going crazy from cabin fever. Whatever it might be, we're afraid of spending Pesach alone or with less people than we thought. Whatever it might be, we turn to God, and we say that our solace is in God. And that makes sense. That's like a normal religious sentiment. But if you look throughout history, and you look at some of the critiques of Judaism from the outside, often the critique will be, well, you know, you Jews are not God-focused. You're mitzvah-focused. You're law-focused. You're Torah-focused. You don't care about God. You forget about God. You care about the nitty-gritty. You forget about the big picture. Right? And you have Christians who make this critique, and you have philosophers who make this critique. Kant makes this critique in several places. Now, normally, right, we can just respond, and you can say, well, look, we're doing the mitzvot, but obviously the reason we're doing mitzvot is because we're cognizant of God. And obviously that's true. But in Tehillim Kuf Yutet, as much as God is in the picture, you're conversing with God, at a certain level, the Torah becomes the proxy, and it's okay to say to God, you know, I'm clinging to your mitzvot. I'm clinging to the Torah. Not per se to you. Definitely not in a direct sense. If you want, there are certain extreme expressions of this in this coming towards the end. So let me look towards the end at a few others, and then we'll draw some conclusions. If we look, okay, I'll share screen again. Share screen. There we go. Okay, now we're going to scroll down here. It's going to take us a bit. 1 second. Let's go down to Tuf. Like I said, this is the longest perek by a landslide with that 8 times acrostic. Okay, so here all the way at the end. Tikrav rinati lefanecha Adonai kidvarcha havinei. May my plea reach you, God. Grant me understanding according to your word. Tavot chinati lefanecha ki imratcha atzileini. May my petition come before you, save me in accordance with your promise. Tibana svatai tihila kilamdeni chukecha. My lips shall pour forth praise for you. Teach me your laws. Ta'an lishoni imratecha kichol. Kichol mitzvatecha tzedek. My tongue shall declare your promise, for all your commandments are just. Tihi achal azreni kifichodecha bacharti. Lend me your hand, because I've chosen your precepts. Or again, I'm choosing the Torah. And then in a striking, in some striking, let me live that I can praise you, but may your mitzvot be my help. Right? Again, we're talking to God, but the help that we're talking about from God is the mitzvot. And we continuously say throughout this that, again, there's this strange phenomenon where I'm clearly praying to God, and I'm clearly praying to God, I'm talking to God, and yet consistently I'm telling God that the relationship that I have often is with him, with his mitzvot. Let me just get one more. Now, perhaps the most striking of this, and then once we see this one, we'll reflect on this. If you want to see how extreme this gets, let me look at one more example. 1 second. I'll get the pasuk before I do screen share. Pasuk Mem Chet. And this is perhaps the most striking of all the examples in Tehillim, in the Perek, and that is this. V'esa chapai el mitzvotecha asher ahavti v'asicha v'chukecha. I reach out my hands to your mitzvot. Now normally, nesiat kapai means I pray. Right? I pray, it sounds like, I pray to your mitzvot, which I have loved, and I talk about your laws. Right? And this is even more extreme. We're here, at some level, so much as the focus become the mitzvot, the Torah, that the author of this parak, David HaMelech, says, I pray to the mitzvot. Right? So, you could look at this perek, and I think this would be very wrong, and say, well, what this perek is teaching you is that, in fact, to go back to sort of our framing, there's nothing wrong with an extreme Reb Chaim Volozhin-esque philosophy of the world. The purpose of Torah is Talmud Torah Lishma. When you're focusing on Torah, the focus is Torah. That's it. Nothing else. And therefore, if at some point that's all you're cognizant of is Torah, so that's fine. You're praying to Torah. You're connecting to Torah. You're connecting to mitzvot. God is in the background. We know that. We're cognizant of that. But day to day, you know, you're allowed to just learn Torah Lishma. Focus on the Torah itself. But I'm not sure that's true. And that framing I started with from Rav Krumbine, right, where we have to distinguish between goal and the mechanism or the process, right, as David just sent me, I think is correct here as well. Right, so we said, right, Rav Krumbine says, what does Rav Chaim Volozhin mean? Not that you should focus on Torah as its end goal, but rather that it's legitimate while you're learning Torah to focus on the content. As long as you remember that the ultimate goal is God, it's good, okay, to be completely caught up in the process of Talmud Torah, to be completely caught up in the mitzvot, to focus on the mitzvot and the Torah as if it were for its own sake. As long as you know that in the end of the day it's for God, and that every so often you remind yourself of God. And if we go through Tehillim Kuf Yutet, so I've showed several examples, including what I think is the most striking one, where at some level it's almost like we're so mitzvah focused and so Torah focused that we're like, we feel like we're praying to the mitzvot, right? Like that has been our surrogate, right? That is what we're talking about, which sounds heretical, but that's what the pasuk seems to say. But as I said, if you read the perek carefully, there's this complexity over and over where it's not, right, if you really thought that the theology here was it's okay for us to just engage in mitzvot and Torah and think about Torah mitzvot and forget about God, so then the author of this Perek of Tehillim, David HaMelech, when he's talking, should have written this as an ode to Torah, not as an ode to Torah in conversation with God. Right? He should have just said, I love the mitzvot, I cling to the mitzvot, I live for the mitzvot. The mitzvot give me solace, Torah gives me solace, Torah keeps me company, Torah gives me comfort, Torah, mitzvot, this is what I live for. But he doesn't. Right? The complexity is where he turns to God and he says, God, you should know, sometimes it's like I pray to your mitzvot. God, you know, I love you so much that I cling to your mitzvot. God, your mitzvot is in front of me. My relationship with your mitzvot, it's this constant dialectic where he's talking to God, but he's telling God that my relationship is not directly with you at all times. It's with the mitzvot. And when you realize that complexity, so now we got to come back and say, well, what then is the message of Tehillim Kuf Yutet? And here, I'll take some of the ideas that people sent me, but I think you can take it in different directions, and I think some of them are, you know, there are multiple ways of reading this that are all somewhat true, and I think relate to our experience. You know, we see a lot of, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but, and maybe it's just because I'm a rabbi, so I'm on a bunch of rabbinic listservs, and I have a lot of rabbis as friends who are posting all the time for their congregations on Facebook, so I'm seeing what everybody is saying, right? And you have basically two, well, you have many, but let me highlight two different approaches of what people are writing right now. Some people are saying, you know, shul is amazing. It really is. We miss shul. But as long as you can't go to shul and you can't do what you normally do, it's an opportunity for us to daven by ourselves and connect to God. Because sometimes when we're in shul, it's hard to connect to God because, you know, we have to get to work and we're going to the earliest minyan possible and we want to make sure to make kedusha, so our own Shemoneh Esrei is all of, you know, 3 minutes, And I remember, you know, those winter days when, you know, I daven all the way up to Yishtabach without my tefillin on, and then, you know, you put your talis and tefillin on and get out of, you know, and people are running out in the middle because even the, you know, no matter how early you daven, even if you daven before Kavasikin, before sunrise, you daven the earliest time, it's too late to get to work. Now we have nowhere to go, right? Most of us are not at work, we're not going to minyanim, so we're at home. I know it's hard, I know it's depressing, but you know what? Reconnect to God. And then there are other people who are talking about, right? This is just two sides of the same coin, people saying, well, you know, I don't know how much, if I realize how much I needed shul until suddenly I can't go to shul. And I don't know how much I realized that I care about mitzvah X, Y, and Z that I suddenly can't do. Because it's very nice to tell me that I'm home and I can still daven and connect to God. It's true. But it's so much easier to lead a religious life where God is in the background, but there is a structure to my religious life, than when suddenly there's no structure and it feels like my only way to connect to God is God unmediated. Like, it's nice to say that in theory, but let's, you know, our religious life is built around structured ritual. That's what we do. And then there'll be all the people who say, you know, it's very nice to say that at the Seder, I can still do the mitzvot, and I can still read the Haggadah, and I can still talk about how God saved us. I can focus on the theology, but what makes my Seder, and what inspires me is that I'm eating the matzah with the family, and I'm eating my maror with the family, and I'm singing the songs with the family, and I'm teaching my kids. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that this year. Right? So on the one hand, you have people saying, you know, sometimes we get so caught up in the ritual that we don't have time to just connect to God unmediated. So at least take this opportunity to daven with a minion, without a minion, and focus on God because you got nowhere to go and no chazarat hashatz to make and no kaddish to say. And other people are saying, you know, I never realized how much ritual gives me structure and how much my inspiration comes from the Torah and the mitzvot and the shiurim and even what we engage in, right? The fact that so many people come out to have a Zoom shiur, right, in the middle of the day because Torah provides us with some solace, we recognize that we really do need that. I mean, last night we had one in the community, and it was funny to me, right? We had a Zoom shiur in the community. And I was thinking, it's one thing to say you have a shiur in the community, but why do you have a Zoom shiur for a community? And once you're having a shiur on Zoom, have it for the whole world, right? But on the other hand, I was sitting there with Ora watching the shiur, and just like I'm looking now, I had the you know, all the names and all the pictures of people on my screen, and I said, you know, it's sort of nice that we're all learning Torah together, and then you realize how much you miss it. How much the act of going to a shiur with people as a community gives us structure and what is what inspires us. And I think that complexity and that dichotomy, that on the one hand, we recognize, as you find elsewhere in Tehillim, that we want to not lose sight of the fact that behind it all, behind the Torah and the mitzvot, is God. And therefore we cling to Him, and it's He who gives us solace, that when we're stressed out and when we're scared, we turn to Him. Much of Tehillim focuses on that aspect. We cling to God, we pray to God. But Tehillim Kuf Yotet reminds us that as much as we're in conversation with God, day to day, often what gives us structure and inspiration and keeps us sane and keeps us grounded and keeps us in God's orbit is not these conversations that we have in private with God. Right? It's not the Hasidish Hizbodidus out in a forest. Right? I mean, it's nice. You know, like the Ushpizin moment. But day to day, that's not what grounds us. What grounds us is those things that sometimes we forget are about God. Right? It's going to shul even when we're rushing through the minyan. And it's going to the shiurim that we find fascinating and inspiring about some nitty-gritty issue in halacha or some fascinating issue in the parsha, even though we don't sort of every 3 seconds say, by the way, God wrote the Torah, by the way, this is God. We're just inspired by the Torah, and that keeps us in this orbit. And Tilim Kuf Yutet celebrates that aspect. And that and as I said, even within Tilim Kuf Yutet, you have that dichotomy where the author is turning to God. Right, he's saying, God, I'm talking to you, but I don't cling to you directly. Sometimes I don't even pray to you. God, just know, sometimes I pray to the Torah. That's what it feels like. That's my reality. Is it really true? No. Obviously, you're behind it. How do you know? Because I'm talking to you now, and I'm telling you this is what I do. But day to day, Tehillim Kuf Yutet comes to tell us it's legitimate, and in fact, that is the wisdom of the Torah. That the Torah isn't like some religions where you're expected to just be in some mystical state, right? Ponder God until you are one with the universe, right? The wisdom of the Torah is that for most people, that's just not possible. The way we connect to God, the way we connect to other people is through action, is through doing things which represent that relationship. And therefore, much of the time, our focus is on the nitty-gritty. We're not saying we lose track of it, but we understand the brilliance of the fact that day to day, sometimes we cling to the Torah and the mitzvot, not to God directly, even though He's in the background. And I think, as much as I said, I don't want to, you know, I find this perek fascinating in general. And when I gave it last time, I gave it on Shavuot, because for me, it was an important perek to learn on Shavuot when we were talking about Matan Torah. What is Matan Torah? Right? Is it the day we celebrate the Torah as our almost, not entirely, but almost as a goal in and of itself? Or is it the day that we focus on the fact that God gave us the Torah, on our relationship with God? And the answer is both. Right? Partially, we focus on the relationship in its pure form, and partially, we celebrate this structure that God gave us that doesn't make us think about God constantly in the abstract and allows us to ground our life around godliness, even if it's not cognizant, or even we're not cognizant of it. To be fair, the same thing is true in our relationships, right? We all know that if we spend our entire life telling our parents, kids, spouses, whatever, we love you, we love you, we love you, right? That's important. But sometimes it's like the begrudging, you're half awake, roll out of bed, make, you know, breakfast, like now, you know, I roll out of bed, I make breakfast for my kids. They're still waking up at 6 in the morning, even though they don't have school, and I don't have work, and no one's going anywhere, right? Sometimes that's the way that we show that we love them, and that we're connected to them, and we're not saying we love you, we're just pouring that cereal at 6 o'clock in the morning, wishing that we were in bed, and knowing that we've just added several unnecessary hours. Today, in all of our relationships, there's this dichotomy, right? That on the one hand, you need to focus on the relationship, but sometimes you need to connect and embrace the nitty-gritty and the details, and yeah, in the back of our minds, we know why we do it. But we can't constantly just be saying, I love you, 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 and that's all that's important. Sometimes we just say, yeah, I'm enjoying having dinner with you, I'm enjoying making breakfast for you, or I'm not, right? But that's what occupies my time, and that is beautiful, too. And Tilim Kuf Yutet tries to capture these two poles and these two sort of paradoxical but really simultaneously true ways in which we connect to God. And like I said, as much as this shiur is a shiur that I gave on Shavuot and just as important to think about when you think about the Torah and our relationship with God and Torah mitzvot in general, as with most things these days, right, as our schedules have been completely thrown off, it's important to think about both of them. On the one hand, it's a time to focus on the non-Tilim Kuf Yutet part of the equation, right? I'm focusing on you, God, because I got no minion to go to, so I can just focus on you as much as I want when I daven. But on the other hand, it's a good time to remember, or we're being forced to remember against our will, how much we really do appreciate the mitzvot and Torah, and how much that's the way that we connect to God, and how lost we feel sometimes when those detailed aspects of our life that are predicated on a relationship with God but are not just abstract ponderings of the divine, how important those are to our life, which on the one hand means that when we get back to them, we'll appreciate them, but also reminds us how important it is to find ways in our life to make sure that we don't lose that, right? That we keep as much of that structure of Torah and Mitzvot in our life, because at the end of the day, that is what grounds us, right? And again, it's complicated, right? How we do that is complicated. You know, now everyone's trying to figure out what to do state or night, right? So just yesterday, I saw that both Rabbi Mervis from England and Rav Rimon here and several other rabbis have said, well, you know, Seder night, for many people, will be alone. You'll have to come up with new ways of just connecting to God, maybe by yourself, maybe just with your spouse when you thought you'd have a lot of kids. And you'll have to find a new inspiration just connecting to God that way. But on the other hand, maybe what you should do is start your Seder, not your halachic Seder, but your quote-unquote Seder, 2 hours before Yom Tov, right? Set the table early, get into Yom Tov close early, set the table, put your computer on the table, and anybody who you thought would be with for the Seder, so you can't eat the matzah on the maror yet. But a lot of the things that we think about at the Seder, which are less halachically central, but for us experientially important, like all the songs, you can sing Hallel as many times as you want, you can tell the story as many times as you want, you can sing all the songs in Nirtza, and if you want, you don't even have to repeat those later, right? You have to repeat the story after nightfall when you actually have your Seder. You have to repeat Hallel over the coast, over the grape juice and wine when you get there. Nirtza, Echad Miodeach Agadya, you want to sing that before and not get back to it at night? That's fine, right? That's not a halachic part of the Seder. So do that for an hour and a half and 2 hours, and mimic as much of that practice with your family as you can over Zoom, right? Over Skype, over whatever, right? And then find your new ways of connecting to God by yourself or just with your spouse once nightfall hits. And we're all sort of learning new things about ourselves in both of these sides of the equation. Again, turn off the Zoom at sunset, right? That's the should be the implication there, right? There have been these psakim of people who are saying leave Zoom on. These are poskim who are not endorsing that and are saying we have a compromise, right? Set up your 2 hours before Yom Tov to enjoy the experiences, the mitzvot with your family that inspire you, right? And then find new ways of connecting to God and the story of His salvation by yourself once the sun sets. And I think that thinking about Tehillim Kuf Yutet and the complex ways in which we relate to God directly, and sometimes we relate to God only in the background and focus and gain inspiration from Torah and Mitzvot in and of themselves, to find ways both to reconnect to God, but also to remember how much we appreciate the structure of Torah and Mitzvot, and find ways of keeping as many of those structured elements of our religious life in place, because we need them so much, and on a day-to-day, often that's what we connect to. That is our challenge, and that is what will help us get through this insanity as much as we can, and savor the normalcy that we return to as soon as we get out of this insanity, or as soon as it is physically possible and healthy to get out of it. So, like I said, Tehillim Kuf Yutet, I think, is a good way to think about it, but as with many things in life at this point, being forced into new situations is forcing us to be creative and reflect on the religious experiences and relationships that we normally take for granted. So with that, as always, it's good learning with everyone and seeing people. If I don't see you before Pesach, a Chag Kasher V'Sameach to everyone, and really a healthy, well, just be healthy. Be healthy before Pesach, be healthy on Pesach. Keep yourself sane however you need to do that. But yeah, Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and hopefully at some point this craziness will be over, and we'll get to see everybody in person again. So thank you again to Rabbi Kelman for organizing. You want to close off? I see your microphone is now back on, or not? Okay. Well then, thanks everyone. I don't know if I can actually end the meeting. I can leave it, but I'm not in charge of the meeting. So, yeah, Chag Kasher v'Sameach, and I will head out.